I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. It's Thursday, and that means it's time for sports with our very own Tony Cox. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Farai. Let me ask you a question. How do you like your name, Farai Chidea?
Hey, it's me. I'm never going to change it.
I don't blame you. Well, I ask because people change their names all the time, but there was a name change by an NFL player from Tampa Bay this week that, well, let's let the sports bloggers tell us about it. I'm joined now by Marcus Vandenberg, a senior producer at BET.com and author of the sports blog Player Hater, and Mike Tillery, who writes for the blog Starting Five. Hey, guys.
Hi, how are you?
Great. So what's in a name? I guess it depends on who you are or who you want to be. Take the Buccaneers sophomore defensive end Gregory Alfonso White Jr., for example. He has legally changed his name to, drumroll please, Styles G. Yes, that's Styles, S-T-Y-L-E, with a Z at the end and G period for flavor, I guess. For you movie buffs out there, you may recognize this name from the 1985 movie Teen Wolf, starring Michael J. Fox. So, Mike, what do you think about this? Was the movie really that good?
I don't think it was really that good for me, but if you look at today's athletes, it's all about swagger. It's all about confidence. It's all about portraying a confident image. So maybe this is why he chose Styles P. I was reading a piece, and in the comments, somebody said, well, maybe he should have changed his name to Reggie White.
Oh, well, I don't know. Marcus, listen, other players like Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver Chad Ochocinco have paved the way for outlandish name changes. You guys may be too young to remember perhaps the most outlandish name change by an athlete in the 20th century. Lloyd Free of the Golden State Warriors legally changed his name to, and I'm not kidding, World Be Free back in the 1970s. You remember that, Marcus?
Yeah, I do. And I think World Be Free worked as opposed to Styles G. White. When I first heard the story, I had a Jim Moore moment. I was like, Teen Wolf? Teen Wolf? I mean, do we find a better movie to name yourself after than a 1985 Michael J. Fox film? Well, and I think we have Chad Johnson to blame for this. You know, he had his whole moment earlier in the season with Ochocinco changing his name. And come to find out, the NFL wouldn't let him wear the name Ochocinco on his jersey, so that sort of backfired. So I think, you know, this story is good for this week, but by next week we'll be saying Styles Who.
Well, you know, it's nothing if not creative. So let's move on to another topic. An outspoken person by his own name, Charles Barkley. He recently said that race was the number one factor in Auburn University's decision to hire football coach Gene Chizik, who is white, over what the Auburn alum says was a more qualified candidate, Turner Gill, who is black. Now, Barkley says the school played the race card plain and simple. Mike, what do you say?
Well, it is very unfortunate if you look at his Iowa State record. I think it was 5-19.
Yeah.
I think he didn't win a row game in 2 years or something crazy like that.
10 in a row. 10 losses in
a row. Yes. I mean, what really is it going to take? I mean, I look at it like this. If Eddie Robinson wasn't seen as a contemporary, really, of Paterno, any of these coaching greats, how's a young black coach supposed to make any kind of inroads? There has to be something outspoken done. There has to be something done in this regard to shed the light on what – this is just abysmal. It's ridiculous. 4 coaches out of 100 – plus
119, absolutely, at Division I schools. Well, Marcus, Charles Barkley also mentioned that black coaches are not getting good jobs, he says, when they are hired, not at the big schools, with the notable exception, perhaps, of, you know, Ty Willingham, who went from Stanford to Notre Dame to Washington but got fired this season. You agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. If you look at the 4 coaches that are currently hired, Randy Shannon probably has the most high-profile job, and he's the head coach of Miami. The other 3, Turner Gill's at Buffalo, Kevin Sumlin is at Houston, and recently hired Mike Loxley is at New Mexico. Now, the last 3 programs aren't known for college football. Turner Gill has done a great job at Buffalo. They made the first bowl game since joining the bowl subdivision a few years ago in 1999. So I think that Turner Gill is putting Buffalo in the right direction, but I think Charles is absolutely correct that you're not seeing black coaches coach at USC, you know, Oklahoma. These prestigious programs aren't getting the same opportunities with black coaches. So,
Well, you know, coaching is a tough job in any sport for any color. Just ask Reggie Theus, PJ Carlissimo, Randy Whitman, Sam Mitchell, Mo Cheeks, Eddie Jordan. They have all been fired this season in the NBA. So talk about a short leash. NBA coaches are officially an endangered species, Mike.
I work with the Sixers regularly because I cover the team. And I'm from here, so it was cool growing up and following Mo Cheeks. It seems like when these owners come in, they want their GM. The GM wants their coach. The coach wants their point guard. So if that chain is broken in any way, you're going to have problems. Coaches and GMs, they just sometimes just don't mix. You have to win. You have to win right now, especially in the NBA.
So who's next, Marcus?
I think next is probably Jim O'Brien in Indiana. His team has struggled. They have a decent squad this year. You know, Don Nelson, also in Golden State, he's had some injuries. But also, you know, Golden State was an up-and-coming team. Now they're 7-19. So I think those two coaches are on the bubble.
Well, you know, Mike Dunleavy with the Clippers, he would have been in trouble had he not helped to oust their general manager. So now he's the boss. He would have to fire himself as the coach. We'll have to see what happens there. I do know one coach, though, guys, who ain't getting fired. Doc Rivers of the Boston Celtics. As of this morning, they were 25-2. Third best start in franchise history, although they barely beat the pesky Atlanta Hawks on Wednesday night. So the question I have for you, Mike, is which conference is better, the East with Boston and Cleveland at the top or the West with the 21-3 Lakers at the top?
I would definitely go with the East. I think the East is a lot more balanced. You always are going to have the omnipresent Detroit Pistons who are always going to be there. I thought the West was overrated last year, and the performance in the playoff really showed. So Boston is really a juggernaut, and everybody else has just had to step in line and follow.
Well, you know, the one thing about the Eastern Conference, though, they have dominated the season so far in head-to-head competition, but the West, Marcus, has more teams above 500, nine of them compared to only five in the East.
Yeah, as a Los Angeles native, I have to sort of defend for the West here. You know, right now it's sort of Los Angeles and everyone else. Denver is the second-best team in the West, but I don't know how many people really expect Denver to be there at the end of the season. I don't think the West was overrated last year. I just think that, you know, this season is sort of more balanced between the two conferences, and I think we're looking for a showdown between Boston and LA come June.
June? You mean next week, don't you? Christmas Day. Is it going to be
Christmas
a showdown when they play next week? We'll see what happens, although betting money would have to go with the Celtics. They are more dominant so far. One last coaching question for you, Mike. It's this. You're in Philadelphia. Donovan McNabb is playing pretty well right now. That coming after the Eagles quarterback was controversially benched by head coach Andy Reid a few weeks ago. So did Reid do the right thing as coach by benching McNabb, and is that why everybody's playing better, including McNabb?
Well, I think it put everybody on notice to say, look, if you don't step up, you will get fired. So Donovan doesn't agree with the benching. He thinks that he was made a scapegoat. I talk to him all the time. He's cool. The team seems to be in lockstep with everything that he's trying to do. They don't want to see their quarterback benched anymore, and as a result, they're playing much better ball.
How far into the playoffs do you perceive or do you think that they will go?
If you look at the Giants last year, anything can happen. I don't see a dominant team. Right now, I think that Carolina is the best team in football based on their play right now. So anything can happen. As long as you get in, you got a shot.
Are any of the coaches, Marcus, surprising you so far? I'm thinking about Mike Tomlin, for example, in Pittsburgh, how well he has done as a first-year coach. Anybody stand out in your mind?
I think Bill Belichick. You have to give him some credit. You know, losing Tom Brady week one, having to deal with Matt Castle, a guy who never started USC behind Matt Leinart, Carson Palmer. I think you really have to give his team credit. Also, Tony Sperano in Miami. The whole AFC East is very competitive. And I think it's going to come down to the final week. So I think you have to give those two coaches credit.
All right, one more NFL question before we move on to the next topic, and it's this. Pro Bowl announcements came out this week. Brett Favre made the team. Mike, did he deserve to be ahead of even Pennington, for example, who's done well down in Miami? Or there are a number of other players who arguably could have gone ahead of Brett Favre.
I'm a traditional guy, and when greats are out there and they're on their last legs, I want to see them represented so young kids can see them, you know, in their last hurrah. They can see how great they are. Their dads can talk to them about who this guy was. So I don't have a problem with Brett Favre making it. Of course there are going to be better guys with better statistics that should be ahead of him, but I have no problem with Brett Favre being picked.
Well, let's talk about another form of recognition in a different sport. It's in golf. Here's something that doesn't happen very often of late. Golf's Player of the Year has been named, and it is not Tiger Woods, who has won 9 times before. This year, the top prize went to Paddy Harrington, the first European to ever win it, and it followed his dual victories in the British Open and the PGA Championship. Now, Tiger had a very good but short year as well, although we don't know where he finished in the voting because the PGA totals are not disclosed for some crazy reason. Tiger's one-legged U.S. Open victory was phenomenal, of course, but apparently, Marcus, just not enough. But the debate's still going on.
Yeah, I think Harrington deserved the award. You know, anytime you win 2 majors in a year, even though it's just only 2 wins of the season, that's pretty impressive. It would be hard, really, to vote for Tiger, considering he hasn't played in the last 6 months. But Harrington's just keeping the award warm for Woods next year when he comes back.
For next year. What do you say, Mike?
I say the same thing. I don't know, though, because, I mean, Tiger won 4 of 6, including a U.S. Open. So,
that's right.
You know, I think Paddy won because he was the first European since 1990. He's the second since Tiger in the last 20 years with 2 majors. So anytime you're linked with Tiger, you're going to have the light shined on you.
Well, I guess he had his one opportunity because Tiger's already said he's coming back next year. He'll be ready for the majors, so we can expect that the POI will be going to Tiger Woods once more next year, won't we?
Yes, of course.
All right, final thing is this. Let's finish with a sport that we honestly don't talk about very much here. That's hockey. And if sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never hurt you, then try telling that to Sean Avery, now formerly of the Dallas Stars. A couple of weeks ago, you may recall, Avery made some pretty nasty comments about his celebrity ex-girlfriends dating other hockey players. We won't repeat it here, but suffice it to say it cost him a 6-game suspension at first, but then got worse when the Stars pulled up the welcome mat. Avery's mouth got him essentially thrown off the team, didn't it, Mike?
Yes, it definitely did. I think Avery is gone because of his past wrongdoings. I don't think it really had anything to do with these last comments. The NHL, nobody's watching it. Nobody really cares anymore. I think that the NHL really dropped the ball here with the suspension. Why the comments are very unfortunate. I think they were very wrong. I don't think that he should have been suspended for saying such.
Well, let me ask you, Marcus, because Avery has since admitted that he does have anger issues and he is reportedly getting some help. Do you think that the punishment fits the crime?
No, I don't. You know, Sean Avery's had a history, though, of sort of running his mouth. He allegedly called George LaRocque a monkey. He's had issues in the past with other players in the league. He's arguably the most hated player in the NHL. Mm-hmm. So this isn't a surprise that he essentially got fired for running his mouth. It's just a shame that, you know, people are talking about the NHL for this instead of San Jose, who's 25-3-3.
Exactly.
They're talking about the negative instead of the positive. So that's really sad for the NHL.
Well, that's true, although they are talking about the NHL, which is something that a year ago they weren't doing at all. Guys, thank you very much. Happy holidays. Watch your mouth. Don't change your name.
Thanks, Tony. Happy holidays to you.
Happy
as
holidays.
Well.
Mike Tillery writes for the blog Starting Five, and Marcus Vandenberg is a senior producer at BET.com and author of sports blog Player Hater, speaking to us from NPR Studios in New York City.